So thanks for being with us, everyone. Open up your magazines now to page 21 as we have part two of the wife of Mark Zuckerberg. Who's Mark Zuckerberg?
He's the founder of Facebook.
Founder of Facebook. And what is his wife's name?
Priscilla Chen.
And she is from Vietnam. Originally, her parents were, right?
Mm.
We're going to find out more about them. So I hope you have your magazines or look at your mobile website or whatever it is and start with us now as we go to part two. We talked about her personal story. And her parents fled Vietnam in the 1970s. Were her parents very well educated?
No, they were not. They didn't actually get a chance to go to college.
Right. A lot of people didn't in those days, you know, and even high school sometimes, like, because the people didn't have very much money, and it's just, you know, a lot of places in Asia, people didn't have a chance to at that time. But then the war was there, and they fled on a boat. And where did they go then? What country did they go to?
They came to the States.
Right. United States, that's right. So we're going to find out a little bit more about that, but what made her start to really care about other people?
Well, it's a combination of things. Being able to have the opportunity to go to college herself, seeing other people struggle as a teacher, as a person who lives in the neighborhood. It's just a combination of factors.
Okay. And what kind of thing made her so interested in a child's education? Do any of you remember what we read?
She witnessed a boy getting jumped in his neighborhood.
Right. She saw a boy that had been attacked by other kids, and he had blood all over his face, and she felt so sorry for him. But if he was the only one, no. There's a lot of violence in some of those neighborhoods. And she said, this is terrible. We have to help them. And that's a very good attitude to say, what can I do to help other people, don't you think?
Yes.
It's very important. So we're glad that, Albert, that you're back here with us today, and let's see who else is with us.
Irene, Michelle, Edith.
And Edith. So let's go on with today's lesson. Today's lesson is on page 21. Where are we going to start today?
We're going to start with her background, getting to know more about it.
Okay. Well, let's just take the first couple little paragraphs there so we can find out a little bit more about her. Are you ready?
Yes. Yes.
Suddenly, Chan, a pediatrician who has largely shied away from public attention, found herself in the spotlight as the doctor spearheading change for some of the Bay Area's most disadvantaged children. It wasn't one defining moment, but rather a series of experiences that would lead Chan on a journey back to education, to a place between the classroom and doctor's office.
So she was a pediatrician, and what did we say a pediatrician is? A baby doctor, right?
Yeah.
Takes care of children, right? And she usually did not like to have a lot of public attention. What phrase did we use that says she didn't like public attention?
We use the phrase to shy away from something. She shied away from it.
Okay, the word to be shy means also to be a little bashful, but to shy away means to pull back from, doesn't it?
Right, to avoid something.
Right. So she did not want to have a lot of public attention. And she found herself, though, in the spotlight as what? How come she found herself in the spotlight? What did she do?
As the doctor's spearheading change for some of Bay Area's most disadvantaged children.
Okay, now she would be in the spotlight since her husband was the one on Facebook. Naturally, she would be. But she didn't want public attention. But she said, I want to do something for the kids in this area. So she moved from the Boston area in the East Coast with her husband over to Silicon Valley that you all heard about in that area and near San Francisco. And then she said, I'd like to find out some way I can help these disadvantaged children. Now, some people don't realize there's disadvantaged children in America. Are there disadvantaged children in any other countries in the world?
I would believe worldwide there's
worldwide.
Disadvantaged. Yeah, regardless
right,
of
right.
the country.
Look at those
well.
Kids in Africa. They don't have enough to eat.
Right.
And you see kids running, the refugees running from the wars. And I see kids in South America. It seems that every country has disadvantaged children. Well, what do we mean by disadvantaged children? Does anybody know? What does that mean?
Someone who's not as privileged as other people.
They're not as privileged. That means they don't have enough food sometimes or good families. They don't have the advantage of being able to go to school because they can't afford it. They do not have the advantages that other people have. So they are disadvantaged. And
right.
They're all over the world, aren't they?
They are, yes.
And it's very sad because they have their whole life ahead of them, right? And so sometimes something happens to people and they see something and they say, oh, that was a defining moment. From then on I did it. But she didn't have one defining moment, did she?
No, it wasn't. You know, a defining moment is something that's like a turning point, a crucial, important time that changes you. But it was a rather a series of experiences that would lead Priscilla on a journey back to education, to a place between the classroom and doctor's office, a combination of those.
Okay. So she was kind of a teacher, but she was also a doctor, a pediatrician. And it wasn't one thing, but all these different things that she kept seeing, and not just one defining moment. But she said, I have to do something about this. And I think that's wonderful that she cared. Don't you think so? What do you think of this lady so far? Don't you think she's a wonderful woman?
She is. I feel like because of her job, because of what she learns, she really knows how to take care of people, and that's really influenced what she does right now.
That's right. I think so. What do you think about her so far?
Oh, definitely. And I'm not really surprised that it wasn't one defining moment because, you know, she is being super generous, her and her husband. And I really like how, like, you know, technically she could just sit back and just live off the wealth and success
she
of her husband.
Yeah. She could go and travel around the world and buy very expensive things, but she doesn't do that.
Yeah, and she's not going to let her husband's success overshadow her as well. She's doing something different.
Well, together. They do things together. They're
yeah.
a philanthropic couple, but
mm-hmm.
she's the private face, right?
Yes.
We learned that yesterday. Well, should we find out more about her background?
Yeah.
Okay, let's read the next section all about her background.
Chan's background. Her Cantonese-speaking grandparents raised her and two younger sisters, while her parents worked long hours at a Chinese restaurant and other jobs. And while her parents never attended college, they wanted their daughters to do better. At Quincy High School in Massachusetts, Chan's teachers helped fill in the gaps. She graduated at the top of her class and got accepted to Harvard early. In a desire to give back, she signed up for the after-school enrichment program. Volunteers went to public housing units where they tutored and mentored children. It was at Harvard that Chan met Zuckerberg. The couple married in 2012 in the backyard of their Palo Alto, California home.
Well, her parents' background was in Vietnam. They fled during the war. But her background was different. She was raised in the United States. Tell us more about her background. What about her grandparents? What was their background? Do you know, Irene?
Her grandparents speak Cantonese, and she has two younger sisters. And
okay.
her parents also worked in a Chinese restaurant.
All right. So a lot of people, you know, from the southern part of China, the Cantonese area, many of them went to the States years ago and started restaurants and things. But her parents were Chinese people who lived in Vietnam, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so her grandparents. And then they went to the States. They got there, too. So they were there. And they helped raise her because her parents were working. What were their parents doing?
They were working at a restaurant.
Right.
They worked really long hours.
Right.
And other jobs.
Okay, so then they took care of her. Well, her parents didn't have a chance to go to college, but how did they feel about their daughter then?
They really wanted their daughters to be able to do better and probably have the opportunities
mm-hmm.
that they never were able to have themselves.
Right. Don't you think that's the way most parents feel? Like, if they didn't have opportunities, they want their kids to do it.
Yeah, know? Definitely.
Yeah, I think everybody feels that way. And she went to Quincy High School in Massachusetts. Now, Quincy is kind of like a suburb of Boston. In fact, my brother, who was a surgeon, a doctor, he lived there too. He lived in Quincy, and his kids went to Quincy High School, so that's why I know about Quincy High School. Mm-hmm. But it's very close to, you know, downtown Boston. It's just kind of like a suburb. Like if you live in Taipei, it would be like Tianmu or something. So she went to that high school. And then her teachers helped her fill in the gaps. Now, what kind of gaps do you think she had, actually? Gap is a difference, something that separates you from others. What kind of gaps do you think she had? She had cultural gaps, didn't she?
Oh, yeah.
Because her grandparents were Cantonese,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And she probably spoke, you know, Cantonese sometimes. But they filled in the gaps of the background. Her parents hadn't been to school, but she lived right there, and that helped, didn't that help?
Right. And, you know, probably her parents are working long hours, mm-hmm. so the teachers were there also to serve as additional mentors.
Right. So they helped, because her grandparents couldn't help that much on that. You know, they could feed her and stuff, but they couldn't help her, you know, with her educational skills, I'm sure. So they helped fill in the gaps. Well, then she turned out to be a pretty good student, didn't she?
Right, she graduated at the top of her class, meaning she was ranked with the highest grades and honors, and she got into accepted to Harvard early.
Okay, now a lot of people, especially a lot of Chinese people, they want to go to these, what you call,
Ivy League
famous schools, you know,
right.
Like Harvard, you know.
Princeton,
and,
yeah.
And Princeton and those, and they think, oh, if my child could get into Harvard, and here's this refugee girl whose parents were not even graduated from school, and she got into Harvard. Wow. Weren't they proud of her?
Yeah.
I'm sure.
I'm sure they were very proud of her, yeah. Harvard is a very famous school back there. And so she graduated at the top of her class, got into Harvard early, very easy. But how did she feel then? Did she feel very proud about it? Or what was her attitude?
No, she wants to give back.
Right. She says, oh, America's been good to me. I mean, my folks came here and they didn't have anything. And I've been able to get all this education. I want to give this advantage that I have to other people. She wants to give back. So that means caring for others, doesn't it?
It does.
And so what did she do then? To show that she wanted to give back.
She signed up for an after-school enrichment program.
Okay, so like a Bushi Bond kind of thing, but it was an enrichment to help your life be better. Some kids didn't have very much. Maybe they were from poor areas, and so the after-school would help them in different ways. And they have a lot of these programs in different places around the world where they help kids that need it more, and probably in the poorer areas of the city, don't you think?
Yeah, because kids from poor areas, they don't get too much opportunity to have education.
That's true. Some of them don't. And so the people, they would volunteer. You wouldn't get paid to do that. You just go and volunteer. And they had these public housing units. Now, some people didn't have enough money to buy their own home, so they had very cheap apartments that they could live, and they called them public housing units. Maybe they were even free, I don't know.
Sponsored by the government, usually.
Right.
Usually in not the most ideal neighborhoods.
No, because it's sometimes crowded, and people don't have a good education. And
right.
Sometimes they're parents,
maybe,
with just only mother or father.
Yeah,
no,
some may can be considered like a rough neighborhood.
That's true, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So they wanted to help out. And what did she do when she was there?
She tutored and mentored children.
She tutored and mentored. Now, tutor and mentor, are those exactly the same meaning of the words?
No, tutor, it usually just means teaching knowledge, while mentor, you're teaching how to live your life.
Right. When you mentor people, you kind of become an example, and you see that they get the overall thing of how to act and how to do things, not just learn something, but how to live. So she really was their mentor, people they would look up to, kind of like, wouldn't it be?
Right. So these are two different words. Tutors, like adding additional instructions in addition to a teacher, and mentoring is advising for life.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, in fact, if you join a new company, it's nice if you don't know how to do anything there, if somebody mentors you, because you don't know how they do that. And so some people who have been there longer will mentor the new employees, and it's very important. If you don't mentor people, they don't know how to do it right. Isn't that right?
Mm-hmm.
So you don't just say, here's a job, do it. They need mentors. And a lot of people look up to others as a mentor. So she joined that kind of program. Well, then she went to Harvard, and something very romantic happened at Harvard.
She met her husband, Mark Zuckerberg.
Yes, that's right. And he was a student there, and they became good friends, and they got married in what year?
2012.
Yeah, 2012. But they lived in California by then, in the backyard of their Palo Alto, California home.
I think this is like a reoccurring theme. Like, they got married in the backyard. It's like very, what we call low-key. They don't want to draw too much attention.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. They just had some friends come in, and they got married there. You know, you can get married in the park or a lot of different places. Some people get married in church, of course. Big wedding feast. No, they just got married there in the backyard. That was pretty interesting. Did that tell us more about her then?
Yeah, I mean, it's a reoccurring theme where she's very humble. She doesn't want to draw attention publicity-wise or have the spotlight on her.
Okay, so that gives us the background of her, where she lived, what she did. But we're going to learn more about her teaching and her learning and what she does with communities as we read the next section, Teaching and Learning.
Teaching and Learning. After earning her biology degree from Harvard in 2007, Chan spent a school year teaching 4th and 5th grade science at a private college preparatory school. Those kids were completely different than the kids that I taught in the after-school program, said Chan. But kids in general have common grounds and common foundations that they need to build. At the end of the day, she said, teachers want to see all their students grow into happy, productive adults who have a passion for what they're doing. Working with the community. The path from child to adult is a long and winding road, and Chan knows she can't do the work alone. There's no antibiotic, no medicine the doctor can prescribe to cure domestic violence or other issues a kid may encounter at home. The primary school's team, she said, spent a year learning about the surrounding community.
So, Irene, what did she study in Harvard?
She studied biology in Harvard, and she got her degree.
Okay, then what?
Then she actually spent a year teaching 4th and 5th grade science at a private college preparatory school.
So she's had teaching experience. She's had quite a bit of experience, didn't she?
Mm-hmm.
That's good. And then she said the kids were different from the ones that she taught in the after-school program. Of course, how were they different?
Well, the biggest differentiating factor is probably wealth. Preparatory schools are private schools. In the States, private schools cost more money, and they usually offer better education in terms of teachers, staff.
The parents are wealthy and have big homes.
Mm-hmm.
What about the other kids? They lived in public housing in low-cost areas.
Right.
They're quite different, wasn't it?
Right. But she says this like, oh, you know, the kids are different, but, you know, in general, they have common ground.
They have common grounds and common foundations. Now, common grounds, what would that actually mean?
It means to have opinions and interests shared by people.
Yeah, they have things that we agree with that are the same. We have common ground. We have our parents, our mother and father, and so forth. That's common ground. But what has got common foundation then? Do you know what that is? It's kind of more like, you know, you have your both parents, like some kids that are very poor kids, they don't have enough father, he left home and stuff like that. But if you have the same kind of background, or some of you were raised by your grandparents, so that's a common foundation you have, something in common with the way you were raised. So common grounds means that you can talk about things. You all live in New York or Washington or wherever you live, then that has to do with your common grounds. We live here now, but your common background is your whole family background. Some of you, now you live in America, but some of you have a background in Asia, so you have common foundations.
Mm-hmm.
Even though you might live in America, but your parents came from Asia, so then you have common foundations with those. Some people only live in one country. They have a common foundation.
Mm-hmm.
So those two are two different concepts. And so she taught these kids, and they were very different, but they had some things in common. They all lived in that area. That's one thing. And they were all students. So there's some things that were alike and some things are different. So that's kind of all that that means there. But then they say, at the end of the day, you hear that phrase a lot. People say, well, at the end of the day, what do they really mean by that?
It means overall or after all.
Yeah, after all, when all is said and done, after all, no matter where you're from, what your background, what it is, but no matter who the teachers are teaching, the teachers, in the end of it all, what do they want to see?
They want to see all their students grow into happy, productive adults who have a passion for what they're doing.
That's right. Now, it doesn't matter if the kids are poor or they're rich. They want to see all those kids succeed. So at the end of the day, or you say this is the whole thing together, right? Common ground. So what about working with the community?
Well, you know, the path from child to adult is a long and winding road. And I really like this the way the author wrote it, winding road. It's not a straight road.
Think it is long? I think when you're in school, you know, when you're eighth grade, you've got high school, college, and, does it seem like a long time to some of you?
Yeah, and a funny thing is when you're in high school, you always just want to be an adult. But then when you're an adult, you want to go back to, not necessarily high school, but you want to go back to childhood.
Well, it's kind of, but it is a long time because by the time, you know, you start school, you see a little kid, they're just in kindergarten, the first grade. They're going to go to school for how many years? It's kind of a long road, and it's, you never know what's going to happen and what schools you're going to get into, and it's kind of a winding road. Do you think that's a good statement? Do you feel like that sometimes? Well, you guys are on the long, winding road right now.
Yeah. For sure.
It is a long ways to get through because you've been studying ever since you can remember, right?
Mm-hmm.
One thing when you get out of school, you think, I don't have to take tests anymore. That's nice.
Actually, I feel like tests are easy. It's something that you can study for, whereas, you know, after you leave school...
You were brought up in Los Angeles, not in Asia. Tests are easier in Los Angeles than they are, is that right?
Yeah.
But what I mean by that, Doris, is that, like, you know, when you go and join the workforce, there's no, the test isn't really clear cut. You can't study for everything. You can't prepare. These are things, you're given things and tasks where there's no clear cut answers.
Of course, now you can take all kinds of tests on the web and you can look up, let's say you want to do a certain job, you can learn how to do it on the web. So you still study, but you're kind of on your own and you study what you want. But anyway, whatever, it takes a long time. And she knows that she can't do this to help these kids all by herself. There's no way. And there's no pill you can take. They said no antibiotic. That's a pill. When people get sick, they take an antibiotic and they're well. Can you take a pill that will help you get through life?
I wish. Sign me up.
Can you?
No.
And there's no medicine. The doctor can't say, eat this medicine and nobody will beat you up or hurt you. That's just kind of a way to show you have to figure out another way. There's no medicine to cure this.
Right, and specifically, they're mentioning domestic violence. Now, domestic means relating to home or within a country. And domestic violence is something usually where it's violent behavior within a family, usually involving mental and physical abuse.
Right. Sometimes, you know, the father drinks or he doesn't have a job or he left home and the mother's taking care of the kids. And these are kind of things there's no way to say, well, take this pill and you'll get over it. No, you have to work out the problems and solve it. So this primary school's team that she has, they spent a whole year learning about their surrounding community, where they lived, what were the needs, and then they started to do something about it. Now, this is like seeing the big picture, and that's what we're going to talk about when we come back tomorrow, because you can't just look at the situation. You have to look at the big picture. And now, before tomorrow, you might want to see some more fast facts about Priscilla and how much money they gave and what they did. I think that's very interesting. And those are some of the things that we're going to learn about her. But they did give away a lot of money, so be sure to read that over. You'll be surprised how much they gave away, don't you think?
Mm-hmm. It's a lot.
Mm-hmm. So what have we actually then learned today so far?
Well, we learned more about her background, where she comes from, and we can see how it's shaping her, like in terms of how after she graduated, she continued in education because it's something that made an impact and influenced her life.
Okay, well, let's ask a couple of questions about her up here. Where was she born and when?
1985.
In Braintree. Now, Braintree is also another suburb. It's like Quincy and those are all the little suburbs around Boston. the little towns. And that's where she was born. So she was not born in Vietnam. She was born in Braintree, okay? And then she graduated from high school, and she went to Harvard. What else did we find out? She was a science teacher, wasn't she?
She learned biology.
Right. And then she went to medical university in San Francisco. And she graduated in May 2012. When did she get married?
2012.
Yeah. So you can find all that. You want to find out more about her? Read that. And then, see, it says in May 19th, 2012, they got married. And that's the year she graduated from medical school. Isn't that great?
Yeah.
Wow. She got through school. Now she can get married. And then after that, right in December 12th, that same year, what did she do?
And she committed $18 million
shares to the Silicon Valley, which is right south of San Francisco, to their community foundation. $18 million. They were young, just married. Wasn't that wonderful?
Mm-hmm.
They started right out giving it away. And then later on, they helped in the San Francisco area. What happened in May 2014?
Well, the couple committed $120 million to improve schools in the Bay Area.
$120 million. Don't you wish you had that much to give away? That would be fun, you know. We go on and read all about all this money that they donated. And even now, they're going to give away 99% of their Facebook shares through the different charities. So they really are into giving.
Mm-hmm.
And remember, should be so, gang yo fu. It's better to give than receive, and you'll be happier. So come back tomorrow, and we'll look at the big picture. See you then, everybody. Goodbye.
Bye.
Bye.